Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. I think first Iron Chef in studio, Jose Garces. Thank you for being on.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and you're dressed in your Iron Chef wear, as I see.
I'm always ready for battle.
We're here because you have this amazing new book out, The Latin Road Home, which we'll talk about during this episode. But it was a long road to arrive at this culmination.
Absolutely, it's been a great run. I've had a wonderful time getting here, and I'm still alive, still like alive to talk about.
Yeah, upbringing in Chicago, Ecuadorian parents. What was the cuisine like? What was the cooking like? What did you eat and savor?
I ate really great ceviches. My mom was a fan of the shrimp ceviche in particular, but also empanadas, locros, fritada, really traditional Ecuadorian staples.
What were those? What are the potato patties called with the cheese?
Lapingachos.
Yeah, so many letters I didn't even try to venture into
that. The double
that.
L will get you every time.
But, I mean, was there an Ecuadorian community in Chicago growing up?
There was. There was actually a handful of Ecuadorians, at least my parents had a handful of Ecuadorian friends, couples who we would get together on a regular basis. And, you know, that was part of my Ecuadorian upbringing, was, you know, having these experiences with the small Ecuadorian community that is in Chicago.
And tell me, how important is crispy pork to an Ecuadorian's diet?
Crispy pork is like you have, it has to be perfect. It has to be crispy. It has to be succulent on the inside, and if you don't do it in that way, you'll be chastised.
Yeah. Is it called carnitas? Or
no, it's called fritada.
Yeah.
Or in Peru, they call it a chicharron. But we know it as, either in Ecuador, as fritada or hornado.
Yeah. And we were just talking about, your wife is Cuban.
Yes.
About lechon, you know, a large pig cooked in a cajachina.
Sure.
With all these different iterations of crispy pig, in a sense, from Latin America. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I do like the Cuban style, but they're all like Latin cultures in general. They have many things that are in common, but there are specific techniques and ways that things are prepared that are unique to those different Latin countries. I think, you know, one of my favorite of late is definitely the Cuban style, which is roasted in a cajachina. We roasted 270-pound swines on Monday in a celebration of the launch of the Latin Road Home. And I think the pig itself is delicious, but I love the sides that go with it. I love the black beans, the tostones, the steamed yuca, the sour orange mojo that are Cuban staples, and one that, you know, a Cuban wouldn't be Christmas without having their lechon asado.
Yeah, yeah. And so you mentioned these sides, and they're analogous throughout Latin America. You see beans, you see, you know, yuca and cassava and different roots throughout those different countries, but the techniques and the flavor profiles change. You cooked in Spain, which was a starting point for, you know, exploring Latin cuisine. Where did you cook, and how did that inform your palate?
Well, when I was in Spain, I cooked at upon finishing culinary school in 1996, I went to...
Oh, you didn't have to give away your age. Sorry. Everybody's safe here.
Well, I'm still a young man.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went to a place called La Taberna del Alabardero. It's a Spanish restaurant that was owned by a priest, Juan Lathama, and he had three restaurants. one in Marbella, Madrid, and Sevilla. And, you know, at that point, I was still a young cook, kind of just fresh, a little wet behind the ears, and was just interested in learning about Spanish cuisine and learning about their culture. And I guess that first experience was really an enlightenment. It was a place in which I learned about regionalities of cooking. And, you know, even in the kitchen, there was cooks from the north, cooks from the south. There's obviously political issues in Spain, and so even in that, at that point, I was like feeling like,
yeah,
like caught in between a crossfires in this kitchen. But it was just great to see the way they organized their kitchen, more of a European style, a brigade, like kind of very rigid, and just a point in my career where I was a sponge, just kind of soaking in all of the different flavors of Spain.
Yeah. Do you feel like you brought something to the table that other cooks didn't? Because you had a paternal grandmother who was an excellent cook, and she taught you plenty in the kitchen. Were you allowed to show those influences?
No, they actually had no interest in what I had what I had to bring to the table. They were like, they were teaching me, and I was happy to be their student. I mean, we had, for family meal, paella pretty much every day, but several different versions, you know, the black squid ink, a saffron, a red rice or a cuttlefish paella. And those kind of experiences, those staff meals that I had with, you know, cooking with Spanish chefs, were the ones that I brought back to my first restaurant, Amada Spanish restaurant. And those influences, those experiences are ones that are truly invaluable.
So Amada, which is located in Philadelphia.
Yes.
It's Andalusian. So yes. You talk about regional. I actually was taught Andalusian Spanish, and it was great because I had a speech impediment, and I think two go in hand sometimes.
Yeah.
But Andalusian cuisine is different than Spanish cuisine in how?
Well, it has a big Moroccan or Moorish influence. So you see a lot more lamb, some stone fruits, and you know, almonds, and it's just you know, it basks in the sun, so the ingredients are a little bit different. And it also, you know, they say it's the birthplace of tapas, so you see a lot of great tapas bars. But as I learned throughout my years of traveling to Spain, tapas are everywhere, and every region has its own specialty.
Yeah. And Philly, prior to that, did it have tapas or did it just have cheesesteaks with whiz?
Cheesesteaks with whiz, crab cakes, and Caesar salads.
Yeah.
So I came and, you know, I was just excited to be sharing some of the foods that I'd grown up eating and some of the experiences. So I looked at the landscape and there were zero Spanish restaurants. Nothing. You couldn't find any jamón ibérico or any gambas al ajillo. And so when we opened Amada in 2005, it was kind of a revelation to folks. Wow, this, you know, this small plate thing is great, and I love smoked paprika.
Yeah. So. Well, let's actually talk about the cooks in your kitchen. I think there's this misconception that a lot of, you know, guns for hire, mercenary chefs in and around, you know, the Northeast in the country are Mexican. There are a lot of Ecuadorians in the kitchen.
There are, but you know what? The Ecuadorians are here in New York, actually. There's, I believe, a pretty nice Ecuadorian community here. Mostly in Philly, we have Mexican cooks that are from Puebla.
Oh, yeah.
So if you walk into pretty much any kitchen in Philly and you ask a Mexican cook where they're from, they're going to tell you they're from Puebla.
Yeah. So, I mean, seeing that diversity already... You opened up other restaurants, Chifa, which dealt more with what, Latin?
It's a Peruvian, Chinese, Distrito, which is Mexican. And I had a lot of Mexican influence growing up in Chicago. It was a huge Mexican, one of the biggest Mexican populations in the U.S. And, we went to a lot of different places. We opened Garces Trading Company, which was old world inspired. So cuisines from France, Italy, and Spain. Village Whiskey, Burger, and Bourbon, two of my favorite combination of things. And JG Domestic, which is kind of a farm. I hate to use the word farm to table, but, you know, we bought a farm out in Bucks County. We're growing vegetables and we're serving it there.
Yeah, Artisan American.
Artisan American. Oh, I like that. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, you can have it. Tinto, too. You know,
oh,
you have too many restaurants.
Don't forget about Tinto. Yeah, and Tinto was actually an interesting story because we were doing research for Mada and continued research in Spain. And when I stumbled into San Sebastian and La Parte Vieja, the old part, and had like a true pincho experience, and then went to some of the great like Michelin starred restaurants like Arzak or Berasategui or Mugaritz, I was really inspired, and I couldn't help but like come back to Philadelphia and open this Basque inspired restaurant. And yeah, I'm glad I did.
Yeah, so I mean, you have those influences from being over in Spain and Basque country. Like Distrito, did you talk to your chefs in your kitchen and draw ideas from them or flavor profiles?
Actually, for Distrito, I have to go back pre Amada. I opened a restaurant called Elvez for another restaurateur, Steven Starr, when I was in Philly, and I had already started to draw upon my Chicago influences. So while I was in culinary school, Rick Bayless was there. Like, you know, he was kind of like the hot shit. He was doing it. He was let's just say a white guy cooking Mexican food. So, but he was doing it really well, very informed, obviously. And so I started to draw upon that, a lot of Mexican experiences that I had growing up, whether it was just eating Mexican food late night or any time of day. And then we opened Elvez in 2003, and I think I just started to scratch the surface with it. And when I left Star, I knew that I was going to go back to Mexican cuisine, and we decided to go to Mexico City, my chef de cuisine and I, and just had the best time enjoying all these different Mexican street foods. I mean, it was just the experience was mouthwatering. Let me just,
yeah.
And I brought those experiences along with the influences of our Mexican cooks. So we kind of like brought it all together, and Distrito was born.
Yeah. Well, what's amazing is in this newest book, The Latin Road Home, seeing those travels and how they inform your restaurants and your palate. Your first book, Latin Evolution, was more of an introduction of yourself to you know, the cookbook community and the greater dining scene. But this is so site-specific. What are the places that you visited in this book, and why did you choose those locations?
They all kind of have a common thread. They're places that, whether they're familial or just places that inspired my cooking. I look back on the different travel log and travel experiences that I had. So those experiences are the ones that have informed my cooking, and I wanted to bring to light. But we go to Peru, and Peru was we had some Peruvian friends growing up, and they were, you know, very influential on my early childhood. And so when it was time to open Chifa, and I went to Peru with the thought that I was going to find this fusion of Chinese and Peruvian cuisine.
Why, like, Chinese?
You know, I think at that point in my career, I hate to say I was bored, but I was just looking for something exciting. And I just thought that, you know, gosh, the marriage of those two cuisines, what a great idea.
Yeah.
And we went to Peru and looked for this fusion, and what we found was Chinese restaurants in Peru. So we were kind of, it took us back a little bit, and we're like, okay, well, let's go back and we'll do it ourselves. So Peru was from Cusco to Lima to Machu Picchu, which was really spiritual. The food experiences we had, from rustic to also really elevated, because there's a few chefs who had obviously traveled the world and gone back and really elevated the cuisine, whether it was Gaston Acurio or Pedro Miguel Schifano. There we found in South America, in Peru, some chefs who were doing really modern techniques and applying those techniques to this rustic cuisine. And it was truly inspiring. I think that that can also occur in Ecuador at some point. And so that hasn't happened there. I haven't seen it, at least when I've traveled there recently.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's interesting talking about that high-low. But what's even more interesting to me is we're talking about these five locations, but you have subsets within each chapter too, because it's not just about being in Peru. It's about being in Lima and the tiradito there. You know, that there is regional cuisine in these smaller countries.
Oh, absolutely.
Not even smaller countries. I mean, some are large, large countries.
Yeah. There's 43 million people that live in Peru. And so whether you're talking about the coastal cuisine or where you have this great like ceviche culture, when it's like, you know, the ceviche has to be done a certain way in Peru. It has to have key limes. It has to have salt. It has to have ricotto chilies. And so those experiences on the coast are much different than ones you'll find inland. And for instance, in Ecuador, you'll go to La Sierra, and there you'll see a lot of hearty stews and really slow cooked dishes that are so different than your coastal experience.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break and travel through the rest of your Latin Road travel log. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Jose Garces. And we're talking about his book, The Latin Road Home, and we're starting our journey through Latin America. But before we move to another country, what does Latin mean to you? I think it's a misinterpreted, it's not a misnomer, but umbrella term.
I think Latin to me really means... I guess more or less the language, like, you know, Spanish, the Spanish speaking communities, and it's more of a, I don't know that it's necessarily a place than it is like a feeling, it's a dynamic of being Latino or having this Latin heritage. So, you know, Latin America, and we talk about Spain, but is Spain really, you know, Latin American? Not necessarily. It's more European, obviously, but their influence on all the different cultures and cuisines is pretty relevant. So I thought to include them there as well.
Yeah, well, let's go to Spain. Let's go to Costa del Sol, which sometimes I like to think of as the German Miami of Spain. But it's a amazing place. What, at the south? Is it west or just south?
Well, Spain, I mean, in particular, Costa del Sol is south. So it's Andalusia, it's Malaga, it's Marbella, Puerto Banús, and it just seems very... I like that, the German Miami. Yeah, that works. You get a lot of people that are visiting from Holland or England on vacation, and it's a party most of the time.
Ajo blanco,
yes. Classic white garlic and white almond and garlic soup, refreshing. And when I had it in, whether it was ajo blanco or gazpacho, there was a misinterpretation of it here in the U.S. as cooks were making it like almost like chunky style tomato soup.
Yeah.
When I had ajo blanco or gazpacho in Spain, made by Spanish cooks, it was a drink. It was actually served in a glass, and you had it in the morning or you had it late afternoon. But it was refreshing. It had a little bite from the garlic, but it was meant to be, just a refreshing starter.
So let's go north, and I'm assuming my geography is right. Mm-hmm. Sevilla.
Sevilla is a little north, but it's still has a little of the south It's still considered a southern town, and it just starts to get a little more refined as you head north.
You do the Calcots.
The Calcots. Yeah, well, gosh. I actually started growing my own Calcots because they weren't available in any markets.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so wild green onions, and they're a little thicker. They're kind of in between like a scallion and a leek, and they have just the right amount of texture so that when you grill them whole, they kind of steam on the inside. And we in the Latin Road home, we serve them with a traditional romesco sauce. And it's great to have an open fire when you're cooking these Calcots. They get a nice char.
With some hay. Yeah.
A little hay.
Yeah. Do you do a Calcotada? Do you do an event around the Calcots?
We serve them on all the menus, but that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's travel a little bit to Barcelona.
So Barcelona, obviously, super cosmopolitan, very design forward. It's one of the most touristed towns. And it was a place that when we opened Mercat a la Plancha in Chicago, it was loosely based on the food of Catalonia and Barcelona.
You start seeing saffron. You start seeing octopus with potatoes in a confit. Yep. What are some of those dishes that you've brought back to the States with you?
Well, one of my favorites of that region is a dish called arroz a la cazuela. And it's a hearty stew with rice, but it has some of my favorite things, rabbit, chicken, chorizo. And it really it embodies what Catalonia and Barcelona is all about, is this, you know, bringing of all these hearty ingredients into one pot and coming up with this delicious kind of finesse.
Yeah, yeah. Since I'm already full in Spain, thankfully we're ending in San Sebastian. Can I have some pintos, you know, little bites.
Sure. And one of my favorite ways to dine, it's, the pincho experience that I had in La Parte Vieja is one in which I'll never forget, and I look forward to going back as soon as possible. Great little bites. So in the book we have bandarillas, which are melon wrapped with anchovies, drizzled with a little olive oil, or our duck montaditos, which is duck confit that are wrapped in ham and griddled with a little La Parral blue cheese and some brandied soaked cherries.
Oof.
Good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, it seems pretty good. So you have to work it off a little bit by traveling all the way to Mexico.
Mm.
So Mexico seems autonomous sometimes as an entity when you talk about Latin, like it's its own thing. What are the common threads?
Well, I think that, Mexico, like many of the other Latin American countries, were colonized by Spain for several hundreds of years. So those folks, that Spanish influence, that, you know, European spices, ingredients, kind of made their way into this really Indian, you know, cuisine. And the fact that those techniques and methods are still around several, like, thousands of years later, and that's what you'll find in what I found in Mexican cuisine was like the use of dried chilies, the use of mortars and pestles, and just the fact that they were able to keep their traditions was great.
Well, what is the oldest recipe as far as like etymology goes that you found in Mexico?
Probably mole.
Yeah,
and the fact that they have the mole has so many different ingredients,
but like 30, 40, 700.
Something crazy, but it's the blend of the hard spices, the dried fruits, whether it's plantains, apples, the use of chocolate, the fact that they refry these sauces or they find that refrying really in lard typically really brightens and brings about a whole new dimension of flavor was something interesting as a cook that I learned as I was exploring Mexico.
Yeah. And you're talking about regionality too. Veracruz is a part of Mexico, you know, coastal part of Mexico, a lot of fish. But you don't get like tortillas and tacos and stuff like that. I mean, you do get some fish tacos.
Yeah, yeah, no, but it's very, very regional. Obviously, being a coastal town, you'll eat a lot more seafood. And, the traditional huachinango a la Veracruzana really, really is a great way to look at Veracruz. It's a fish whole fish or snapper dish that's roasted or grilled, but the sauce is pretty complex. With it, it's a tomato-based sauce, but it has capers, jalapenos, sometimes raisins you'll find in it, and it's just really, it's unique.
Yeah, and tortilla is delivered in soup.
And yeah, I mean, what can you say about the tortilla soup? I mean, it's a classic. It's in the book, and I think it's one in which, you know, if you make it, if you mess it up, you're like, you know, you shouldn't be cooking.
I want to jump to Cuba because your wife is Cuban. Yeah. Is she a good cook? You can out her right now if you'd like.
She's pretty good, but since she's married an Iron Chef, she relies on the Iron Chef a lot more than I'd like her to.
Yeah.
But we cook together, and that's one way in which we connect, we bond together as a couple, just by spending some time in the kitchen. And her roots, though, so she actually came to the U.S. when she was 19. She spent most of her early life in Cuba, and she brings to the table her staples. You know, whether it's rice and beans, black beans, red beans, tostones, yuca. That has been a big part of my life the last 10 years, and getting that influence from her has been special.
And well, Cuba is still hard for a lot of Americans to get in. Obviously, you can go through Canada, but
yeah,
you have Miami in this book. explain why.
Well, because there's a huge Cuban population in Miami, obviously, and my in-laws live there, and so we spend a lot of time getting back there. And I had some, you know, really great, unique Cuban experiences in Miami, whether it's getting a delicious pressed Cuban sandwich or going to the walk-up Cuban coffee shop where you get croquettes or pasteles. It's an experience that's unique to its own, and it's authentically Cuban in Miami.
Yeah, what are some places that you frequent in Miami?
There is a place called La Carreta, and they actually have one in the airport. It's a pretty I kind of look forward to going back to the Miami airport, and it's a place where you can go get a completa, which is a complete meal, and it's, you know, it's steam tables, but it's really good steam tabled food. It's you know, usually yellow rice, black beans, some protein, braised chicken, crispy pork, and I mean, you can't go wrong.
Best airport eating you can imagine. So, going to Ecuador, I mean, you didn't make many trips as a child with your parents. When you returned to Ecuador for this book, what was that experience like?
Well, it was one in which I'm not one to, like, go and sit in somebody's dining room or living room couch and hang out. And that, when I say that, I mean my family. So what we did was we put together a brunch, and I brought together all of my aunts and uncles, because there's still quite a few there, and had this kind of celebratory brunch, and I got to see everyone and experience who they are and as Ecuadorians. And I hadn't been back in about 15 years, so it was quite an enlightening experience. But post the family piece, we went to a great place called La Hacienda Zuleta. And actually, the cover of the Latin Road home is La Hacienda Zuleta. And what an inspiring place. This was prior to us owning a farm, and we picked up a lot of things from the hacienda. And the hacienda has had its own garden. They had about 300 head of cattle. It was also a condor preservation center. They were feeding condors who have been endangered in Ecuador because they've been hunted. And it was also a ranch, so a lot of horseback riding. And the best part was, oh, and they also made cheese. So this place was pretty special, and the food was incredible. All the meals, every 100% of the food came from the farm, and to have very gifted Ecuadorian cooks cooking three squares for you every day was amazing. And the flavors, the textures, the just getting back in touch with Ecuadorian food was inspiring in this setting.
Yeah. Is your family from Quito? Because we talked about those things already, you know, the ceviche de camarones, fritada, and las cosas finas. But some of the other places, Salinas, I don't know where that is or what the experience there is like.
Yeah, well, I was, I went back this past past winter, and Salinas is on the coast, and my wife and I had explored the north. We explored La Hacienda Zuleta, which is north of Quito, and we went to Cotopaxi, which was a volcano that was south of Quito. So this past year, we decided, we picked a spot on the map on the coast, and we were in a little fishing town called La Entrada. And in La Entrada, it was a really humble town of about 100 people, a fishing village, small markets. I had my kids there with me, so they got to experience what that life was all about. And that was, I think, a great experience for them. But the fishing that was going on was amazing. We saw fishermen out capturing shrimp, but also they call this, they do a lot of mariscadas, and the gentleman that was a houseman at where we were staying would take me out, and we would go out and get octopus or find oysters right off the coast, and that would be our dinner at night. And there was this whole sense of eating fresh seafood. Having ceviche in the morning and a beer was like that's the way it went down.
Yeah.
And I also we also found the little cabin like restaurants on the beach were truly special. I mean, they had probably when we were in Olon, which is another small beach town on the coast of Ecuador, there was at least 10 to 20 different little cabin restaurants. So you would go in, they'd have like just one meal a day, Ecuadorian style, definitely ceviche, some pork or fried fish. And to have that experience where you're looking at the Pacific, you're hanging out, you walk 10 feet, and you get this real rustic, traditional Ecuadorian meal was heavenly. And they also had bars on the beach.
Yeah. I am absolutely going there. What's amazing about this book is you mentioned it being a travelogue. It's more like a flavor map because you get to travel around and experience all these amazing new sensations, be it heat, be it citrus, be it, you know, crispiness of the pork.
Absolutely. And what we want to do with the Latin Road Home is really, I want to transport you to all these different countries. And we broke the book up into menus. So there's 3 weekday menus, and those are meant to be cooked in under an hour, and meant to mostly are like one pot cooking. And then the weekend menu, which is broken up into cocktails, hors d'oeuvres, this grand like center of the table feast. And yeah, we want to bring you to Ecuador. We want you to at least experience through the Latin Road Home, whether it's Ecuador, Peru, or Cuba, have that experience.
Well, you mentioned home, and I think this is a great end to an exhausting and beautiful journey. You bring somebody else's home with you, because you talk about visiting these restaurants, and maybe paladars are, you know, the opposite of it, but it feels like all the places you visited were so hospitable and so home, and how you've translated that into all your restaurants in Philly and around the country is an amazing accolade to what you experience and how you feel about food.
Well, thank you very much, and it's been a great journey, and I feel really fortunate to have been able to, you know, relay these experiences and really talk about the differences in culture and through my restaurants, through cookbook, or even through some battles on Iron Chef, where I usually like do mostly Latin American slanted food for the audience. And it's been a lot of fun. What can I say?
Excellent. We could cut out this last part because you don't want to offend anybody, but who makes the best empanadas?
The best empanadas, I would have to say, are Ecuadorian. I have to do that because my grandma, who's 91, still makes, and I think the best empanada dough is not a flour-based dough, but it is made from plantains and doesn't have any additional flour or butter. It's just straight cooked rice plantains that end up, if you work the work the banana enough, it ends up having a nice glutinous texture and makes for a very crispy empanada dough.
Excellent. And you have three different variations in the book.
Yeah, mostly inspired by Ecuador, but one is empanadas de viento, which is a flour-based filled with cheese, kind of one for the kids that, you know, that I had them growing up. They were something I look forward to on Sunday afternoons. I'd be watching, I grew up in Chicago, watching a Bears game, and my mom would come with a big platter of these cheese-filled puffs of deliciousness. And then the morocho dough, which is actually, it's an interesting dough because it's made from instant white corn flour. And the technique is pretty tricky. You got to know how to work it, and you know got to know when to like turn them over. So as soon as the dough is made, you put the filling in, let them set up. But it provides this really crispy texture from the corn flour.
And the verde con pollo?
The verde is my grandma's recipe. She makes, she can do about 300 and under 2 hours or so. She's that proficient at it. But it's made from rice plantain and typically can be filled with cheese. And we give a recipe with some braised chicken in it.
Excellent. So the original and much better Hot Pockets.
I would say... And they're classic, but every Latin American country has their own version. So the Argentinians might their dough is a flour base, but it's baked and it has just an egg wash, and they'll usually do ham and cheese or ground beef. The Colombians will have this yellow corn dough that is also crispy, always chicken. And the Peruvians, of course, they have to like stick their nose in it. So, and theirs is a lard-based dough with, and gosh, I've seen it with braised meat as well. So everyone has their own slant. And the Spaniards, though, I got to say, they do an empanada, but it's more of an open-faced empanada. So I don't know. I might say it's not, doesn't qualify.
Like I said, we can cut all this last part out so you don't offend anybody. Yeah. But I hope everyone bought their tickets to go to all these countries and carry this book around with them. It's just a wonderful travelogue map. Thank you, Jose.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org, and we hope to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.